We're live.
Hey guys, welcome to Will and Amala. I apologize in advance. No cold open today because Will is late for some reason. We spent the whole day getting the show ready and he's not here, even though it's now 2:31. So yeah, it's tragic. Taylor's here though. Taylor
hey
showed
guys.
Up.
Ignore this other person next to me for right now. Oh, there he is.
I'm here.
Oh,
I'm
Will, here, hey. You decided to show up, huh?
It's been a crazy day.
Oh, really? It's been crazy. What exactly caused you to be late?
Well, I met someone.
Oh, really? Because I'm thinking maybe you were in line too long at Chipotle or something like that. Was it that?
No, it wasn't that. I met someone.
Oh, really? Is it maybe that your convertible top on your car wouldn't go down?
No. I met someone for real this time.
Okay. Who'd you meet that was so important that you had to be late for the show?
I met Kirk Cameron.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
I promise I met him. Kirk, tell him, Kirk.
Amala, it's true. We bumped into each other at Chipotle.
Kirk
I was
Cameron.
Waiting in line too long, and he was trying to fix his convertible top, but we did meet, and that's why he's late.
Wow, what a wicked turn of events, guys.
Yeah, Kirk so Cameron. I don't want to hear anything out of you anymore, okay?
Never again will I complain about Will being late. Kirk Cameron, welcome to Will and Amala Live.
Hey, I am really honored to be here with you guys. Yeah, thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, we're super excited about it. Let's get into, first and foremost, why you're on the show today. Today we released a video featuring you yourself, Kirk Cameron. You did a Stories of Us episode, and I want to show a little clip for you guys who are watching at home so that you can go and check this out at PragerU.com. Here's the clip.
It's funny because some people say, wow, Kirk, you know, if you didn't take that turn toward faith, think of all the great stuff you could have done. I have a nephew who said, Kirk, tell me you took advantage of the opportunities you had at 17 years old with all those girls who were falling all over you when you're on growing pains. You know, tell me you didn't waste that. And I'm like, bro, I found something so much better. I found a girl. She was beautiful on the inside. She was beautiful on the outside. I married her, and we've been married for 30 years. You have no idea how much more valuable that is, right? I've got 6 grown children who love God and still ask me my opinions about things, who still love to come home and be with me and my wife, and I'm on PragerU Stories of Us. I mean, the story doesn't really end much better than this.
Guys. You guys can go and check that out by going to PragerU.com/watch, and it is our newest release of Stories of Us. What was your filming like for Stories of Us, Kirk?
I was really excited because I'm a big PragerU fan.
Okay.
So just the idea that I got to be there was really exciting, and that was it was really kind of surreal because prior to that, Ben Shapiro over at the Daily Wire had asked if I could come on to the Sunday mornings. And I thought, Ben Shapiro and Dennis Prager, I'm like, I've arrived. I'm here. I'm with these guys that are doing such great work. And I was really honored to be a part of PragerU's latest stuff.
Yeah, I know that at the end of in the clip that we just played, you said, you know, that it was incredible to be a PragerU and all that. That really means a lot to us that you think so highly mm-hmm. of us.
Well, the timing couldn't be more perfect. We need PragerU. We need the people who are supporting PragerU, and the way that you're getting to a young generation, coming from a father of 5 kids, I can't tell you how important it is and how much we need it right now. So thank you both for what you guys are doing.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Without spoiling all of the Stories of Us, just tell people a little bit who might want to know a little bit more about you, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, your path, your story, just a little bit of how you got here.
Well, I grew up in the ghettos of Detroit. No, I'm kidding.
I sold rocks for years.
No, it wasn't one of those stories. My dad's a PE teacher and a math teacher, and I had 3 younger sisters. Grew up in Los Angeles, California when I was 9 years old. I was going to school like everybody else, and then my mom took me down to audition for a talent agent. And I started working on television and eventually got this role as Mike Seaver on a TV show called Growing Pains that went for 7 years. And then my sister, she lands this role of DJ Tanner on Full House. Mm. And Candace and I and our other sisters, we just kind of lived this story, fairy tale storybook kind of childhood growing up. And that led to all sorts of really interesting opportunities for me, which I talked about in Stories of Us, from being an atheist in Hollywood, turning to a rich faith in God, who I never believed in, and beginning to make decisions that were driven by that faith that took me in a very different direction from a lot of my peers. So I grew up with a lot of young men and women who are no longer here, or the path that they chose took them down a road that is very sad. And I'm looking back and I just sort of scratch my head and say, wow, like I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful that I had people, and I think God watching out for me in ways that I don't think I deserved, but I'm certainly thankful for.
I would love to unpack that a little bit more, because we so often hear the trend of child stars entering into Hollywood, and they do the exact opposite flip from what you have. They go from the nice, wholesome Christian maybe to doing drugs and partying all the time and getting in trouble with the police, and we see that descent of childhood stardom. You went the opposite route. How do you think that happened, and like, what steps along the way did you take?
I know just what you're talking about, because, like I said, I had friends that I auditioned with for the same roles, Corey Haim and River Phoenix and others, who, even my best friend on Growing Pains, who've either, you know, they're not here today, mm-hmm. through suicide or drug overdose and other kinds of things. And I understand, because you're a young person with all of the drive and all of the curiosity. And when you add, the influx of all kinds of money and popularity and opportunity to do whatever it is that you want, mm-hmm. that can be a really deadly combination. And you have so many people who are profiting off of you and your success that they don't want to be the one who says no and put up, you know, the guardrails for you. And so I understand it. And I think for me, at 14 years old, I'm on the TV show. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, did you have someone putting up those guardrails for you that you were just talking about?
When I look back now, Will, I see that my mom and dad raised us in kind of a traditional way. We didn't go to church. We weren't a Christian family, but they raised us to be healthy and to treat people nice and to be kind and do the right thing. And I think that helped a lot when I was little, but ultimately when I was on Growing Pains, that's where all the opportunities to go off the rails came. Mm-hmm. And it was right at that time that somebody took me to church. And I talked about this in Stories of Us. That's what really got me thinking about ultimate things. Things like there were kids coming to Growing Pains who were sick with cancer and had a very short time to live, and their wish was to meet the cast of the show. Mm. And those kinds of things of like, wow, all of us are going to die one day. And somebody took me to church, and I thought, wow, one day I'm going to find out if what these guys are saying at church is true. If there really is a God, if there's an afterlife, what happens when I step out of here? And how did the universe and everything that we are in awe of in this life come into being? Is it really all just by chance? Does none of it really matter? Is morality just something that we've made up, or does it really have consequence? And as I processed through a lot of that, I came to the place of just saying, I don't know, but if you're there, I want you to show me. Clearly, if you made my eyeballs and you know how these work, you could see me right now and you can hear me. Show me the truth, because I don't pretend to think I've got it all figured out. And that's what led me down a road that made me to start to trust in God and in his word, the Bible. And that became my compass morally for the decisions that I made that ultimately took me to good places. So I don't credit myself for those things. It's not like, right. What did I do? I kind of feel like I wasn't... I feel like, what did God do? He saw that I was lost and he pointed me in the right direction.
Amazing. And you and Will share that sort of similarity in your journey, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know exactly how that is, for sure. I mean, I was in the same type of boat as you and was saved just about a year ago. We're a week away from my year anniversary of getting baptized and everything. So I feel exactly the same as you do.
What was that sitcom you were on? Was it Silverspoon? No, it was I forgot the name of it, but it was great. I loved you on that show.
Right. No, The Fullest
fact,
House.
The Fullest House.
Yeah, no, The Fullest
That's
House.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think my sister had a poster of you on her bedroom wall.
I mean, every woman did back then.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we don't remember much of those times. But
yeah.
Right. They were good
we
times.
We have a lot in common, Will.
Yeah. Exactly. No, my six kids and my house, I mean, it's amazing, you know? No, but it's that's a really powerful thing because as someone who, again, went through something similar as you, I understand there's a lot of Christians and people out there, especially when they're still in those positions, that will say, you know, I'm trying to go to church and do these things, but it's very hard for them to actually live out the values, right? It's hard for all of us. We're all sinners. That's just by human nature. But a lot of people will claim to, you know, do what you do or say those same kind of things, but then they don't actually live it out to a large degree.
Yeah, because it's hard, right?
It is hard.
It's hard. It's hard. There's consequences. I mean, you know, I, all the things that we're dealing with today, you wonder why people make the decisions and cave and compromise the way that they do. It's because there's consequences to our decisions. And I think what's been so helpful to me, and you tell me if you agree, is I think of the ultimate reward and the ultimate consequence. I think, man, if I can live my life for an audience of one person, rather than trying to please an entire crowd, which is what I made my living doing as a sitcom actor. I'm always trying to please the crowd. If you're clapping, if you're laughing, I get paid and I'm doing good. But that's a very difficult way to live. And ultimately you don't have a moral anchor when you're trying to please everybody. But for me, I said, you know what, if I can live my life in a way that says I'm genuinely thankful that I'm alive and that you see everything that's wrong with me and you care about me and love me anyway, and that I can know my creator, I'm down with that, and everything else can take a back seat.
Right.
No, that's where I came down to.
It's people trying to appease other people instead of trying to appease God. You know, you are putting the values of other people ahead of what God actually things, right? Of what he wants you to do. And so because of that, then you have a lost people. And, you know, there's no doubts that I've made a lot of mistakes still, even after being baptized. It's not like I'm living some flawless
life.
There's
no magic in the water?
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm just perfect, flawless person now. You know, no, but that's how it is. And these things are hard. But, you know, you could talk a little bit about this. Just you're older than I am and definitely older than Amla. You don't look that old. I mean, you look good for
yeah. Let's, nice let's recovery. Save it. Yeah, yeah. Nice let's recovery. Save that really yeah. quickly.
For 70, yeah. You look good.
You know, I'm growing the beard because I had a choice to make. I thought I could either go with the aging teenage actor, or I could go with the youthful mature man.
Right.
Right. No, you smart choice.
Yeah. Youthful mature man.
Smart. Right. Smart.
Not a day over 25.
Right. Solid. I like the. I
you
like
look
the.
Fantastic.
The way you thought that
yeah.
through. Yeah.
I just shaved my beard. So,
oh, did you?
Yeah.
It's growing back.
It is, unfortunately. But we could be more similar in more ways.
He didn't have time to shave because he bumped into me at Chipotle
exactly.
today.
Exactly.
Well, I was shaving, driving.
Yeah,
it just
yeah right,
top,
right.
You know? But in terms of like, you, as someone who is older, you've dealt with a lot of things. You've gone through a lot. You've seen a lot of things. And knowing that this is a hard path to take, you know, how do you deal with something being so difficult? You know, like how do you deal with the difficulties of life? That's what we get asked a lot on the show. And I tell people, like, life is not supposed to be easy. Life is hard, and you have to be able to deal with those challenges and not be willing to just take the easy way out all the time. How do you deal with that?
Well, you know, I guess I could answer that question in a couple of different ways, but I could tell you that, you know, I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I get out my Bible and I'm reading through King David's Psalms. And these are prayers of a guy who's going through very difficult times. He's surrounded by enemies and people who want to kill him. And I think, man, that's stress. I mean, I've got stress with six kids living in Hollywood, but it can get a whole lot worse than that. And so I like to surround myself with people who have wisdom and people who have experiences that put mine into context, whether it's somebody from the past like that, or whether it's people like Dennis Prager or a pastor at my church or friends who are older and have been down these roads before, and they can put my situations into context. And I realize, like, you know what? There are people who have it a whole lot worse.
Yep.
And if I'm consistent with what I say that I believe, I believe that this is actually, this difficulty is going to produce the character that I need to face the next challenge.
Exactly. Mm. Right.
You know? And that's good. And so there's a point to it. There's a purpose to it. It's not just like, oh no, this random horrible thing happened to me and it's not fair. I think, I think there's a purpose and a point to it.
Amazing. And you've been a pretty outspoken person, especially these last couple of years, the COVID-19 pandemic. At the start of this, you came out and, you know, said, I don't want to be locked down in my house. I don't think it's the right way to do it. How did people react to you doing that? Which I think is a very brave thing to do.
When Kirk Cameron becomes a dangerous person, you know, something's wonky with the culture, right? Like, I was singing Christmas carols in a mall parking lot, inviting people around Christmas time to come sing with us. And TMZ's got their drones flying around. And I became, you know, this dangerous person.
How dare you sing Christmas carols? How ridiculous is that?
Yeah. So I guess the problem is I'm listening to other people beside the mainstream woke media. So I'm listening to people like you guys, and I'm listening to friends of mine who are entrepreneurs and doctors that own urgent care centers all up and down California. I'm actually watching and listening to other sources that are telling me that there's a lot of political agendas going on here, and this is the way virology actually works, and this is what we know and don't know, and all that. And so I started to just think for myself and realize that I'm not going to live my life inside of a bubble to serve somebody's political agenda when I can see behind the curtain and see that there's so many lies going on, and people are starving for hope. They're starving for social interaction with people. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to turn this into a communist Christmas. I'm going to go outside in the fresh air and I'm going to sing O Little Town of Bethlehem and invite whoever wants to come. Mm-hmm. And we did it, and we had tons of people. And then we did it again at New Year's down at the beach, and a lot more people came. And what people don't think about is nobody forced those people to come. Mm-hmm. Everybody came voluntarily. Everybody was there singing. They had smiles on their faces. They had a great time. And it's amazing how other parts of the country understand that. But you get into the coast, and all of a sudden you think the sky is falling and everybody's going to die.
Right. No, I like when you said Communist Christmas. It sounds like a punk band from the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, the Communist Christmas, their new album just came out. It's good stuff. But you said the people, they came to the beach and they came to the supermarket all to sing on their own volition. No one had to make them.
That's right.
Why do you think they did that? You know, what is the, because I think that there's a lack of meaning in people's lives right now. I think people are searching for something like that, something to give their lives a little bit more purpose. Why do you think that people would come to that?
Well, what we know is that there's a tremendous mental health crisis that's going on because of the way people have been isolated. And I think that there is immunity in community, one of the things that we've been saying for a while. And people want to be together with other people. And they also wanted to come out and say that we're not just going to be, trapped in this little bubble. This isn't a prison. We can go outside and we're in charge of our health care, not the government. And they wanted to make a statement about that.
And that's important. And it's important that people do what you've done in their communities, because so often people look at things and they go, well, I know that's wrong, but they're not willing to take that step to go out in the parking lot and sing some Christmas carols, as ridiculous as it sounds, that is such a defiant thing to do. People aren't willing to take that step. What is your advice to people who are sort of scared to be outspoken about what they believe?
Well, I understand the fear, because there's consequences, and the powers that be have lots of power, and they can make things uncomfortable for you, and so can your family. But I think at the end of the day, I come down to I look at history and I see how I see the direction that things are going in this country that reminds me of very scary things that have happened in other socialist and communist countries. And I know that if we don't stand up now, there comes a time where you won't have the opportunity to anymore. It's like the old analogy of the frog being boiled in the pot of water. The water temperature rises so slowly, the frog doesn't realize what's happening. And by the time that he finally realizes, he's too tired to jump out of the pot because the heat has exhausted him. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it's why I appreciate Prager, you and all that you guys are doing, because you're helping people to see that the water is warming up and mm-hmm. we need to stand up now. And we need to jump out of this, this pot of boiling woke water.
Yeah. There was this clip on MSNBC the other day, and it was talking about, you know, parents getting involved and people getting involved all throughout the community, getting involved in local politics and school boards or precinct committeemen or poll watchers or any of these kind of things, people getting involved.
Yeah.
And these people, even the people on the like moderate right, are coming and saying that these are like domestic terrorists. They're saying that this is a threat to your democracy. And it's mm-hmm. like, no, this is democracy. Right? Like people standing up and actually getting involved, that's what democracy is people coming and doing all of this. But they want to shame normal people into thinking like, oh, if you're a fighter, then you're doing too much and you're a terrorist now. Right? And and that's like the fear that people are living with, is that they are going to get ostracized in some sort of community like that and get labeled as this, when all they want to do is protect the values that they have seen in this country for years and years that have now been squandered and destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You're exactly right. I think that there was a different breed of American hundreds of years ago that understood that the only thing required for evil to advance is for good people to do nothing. Mm. And they understood that so they got involved. They understood that freedom is not inherited through the bloodstream. It's something that must be fought for and defended. And we've lived in our generation in such relatively peaceful times here in America that I think we've got to be retrained that wickedness is alive and well in the hearts of many people, and the lust for power and to consolidate that power and to control people just grows. That monster continues to grow, and it requires good people to do something. And if we all do a little bit, if we all do our part, like you guys are doing, like I'm trying to do from my backyard, making a campfire, singing Christmas carols, teaching through American history with people, emphasizing the foundational elements of faith and morality for a free society, I think that we can win it back.
I know we can. I know we can. I feel it. I feel the energy with people. I know that most people I talk to, even people who are historically more on the left or, you know, atheist type of people, will come and they'll say, you know, this is just getting out of hand. This is too much, right? Most people, I think, are coming to that realization. But as like you were saying, the people who have the wickedness in their heart, they are just having to get more and more wicked to counteract the people who are standing up and actually waking up and realizing the truth.
Right.
So it makes it difficult. You know, but that's when it is the most important to fight, is when it is the most difficult.
And what I like about what you guys do is I like that you're strong and you're bold and you're confronting the evil and the wickedness that you see in your world, but you're not doing it in a nasty, condescending way that is off-putting, right?
Right.
Whereas I think a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to be mean. Mm. I don't want to raise my voice. I don't want any kind of conflict. But evil must always be resisted. There has to be conflict. And to not resist it is evil in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not protecting your kids or your grandkids or your neighbors.
Oh, it was like that video of the guy in New York on the subway where that lady was getting attacked by a guy. Or it was in Chicago. Mm. And all these people just watch it happen.
Yep.
And none of them stand up to help this lady just getting absolutely attacked.
Yeah.
And it's like when you don't stand up and do something, then evil is allowed to triumph.
Yeah,
it takes good people to stand up and be those heroes in the world, even if it's scary. Mm-hmm. You got to put yourself in a little bit of harm's way to be able to achieve something greatly.
And it helps to see examples that you guys provide, because look at you and
you
see you talking to people and you're like, oh, that was awesome. Okay. okay, that wasn't rude. That was just truthful. Mm-hmm. And I could do that. Or maybe I can't do that, but you know what? At least I can talk to my kids about this, or mm-hmm. I can not just let that go by unanswered the next mm-hmm. time my relative says that at the dinner table. I've got a good answer for that now.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's actually a perfect segue into what I want to talk to you about, because you are ahead of the curve on what's taking a massive wave right now, and that's homeschooling. And you have a very big family that you run with your wife, and you decided to homeschool your children far before it was really a topic of discussion. And now with critical race theory and parents getting a look into what's happening in schools through COVID, a lot of parents are taking their kids out of school. I'm wondering, what is it that you saw back then that tipped you to the point of saying, you know what, I need to put my kids in homeschool. I want to teach them my values.
So it is really interesting. I think I want to say maybe since 2011 or 2012, I believe the number of families who have pulled their kids out of school and are educating them at home has quadrupled. Mm-hmm. And I think half of that growth has happened just since 2020. So this massive exodus out of the government school system, I think, is a great occasion for us to rejoice and have great hope, because parents are realizing not only are their kids being indoctrinated and brainwashed into a completely different ideology than most of us want our kids to have, but it's an opportunity to strengthen our families and to create the next generation of liberty-loving patriots, people of faith who will love God and love their neighbor and bring back the kind of American values that made us the freest, strongest, most prosperous and generous nation the world has ever known.
Mm. Yeah.
Home education is where it's at. If we don't take back education, we've lost.
Right. Well, you take it back yourself with what you're doing. You know, if the public schools fail you, then you have to take it back yourself.
And they're really not public schools, right? Let's be honest. They're government training camps.
Exactly.
Ultimately is what they are.
Exactly.
The government, the local public community is not getting together deciding what should be in the textbooks. That mm-hmm. stuff you were showing me earlier is not being, right. There's not a consensus that we ought to teach our kids that kind of stuff.
Gender elephant or whatever.
Yeah, let's actually pull that up so we can take a look at what's being taught. This is actually an LA school district here. The gender-bred person. Yeah, not man. Person.
He's like gingerbread man.
Yes.
Like gingerbread man.
Like gingerbread, but genderbread. And this is being taught at elementary schools here in LA district. So the genderbread shows at the top, the genderbread person's head is where your identity is. The heart is what you're attracted to. So sexuality, they're talking about sexuality to these young children. And below in the nether region is your sex. And all around you is the way that you express yourself. Now, there's a video that was put out by the school district to train these teachers where young girls and boys talked about, well, I'm a girl and I like the color blue. I don't like the color pink. So that must mean that my gender is spectrumed and I lie somewhere in the middle. And the boys who like wearing skirts or like playing with dolls also express some sort of non-binary form of gender. And that's what's being taught in our schools these days.
That's why you abolish the public schools.
Yeah. Will loves that.
I
that's my line.
That. You know, there's a very telling and terrifying quote from Adolf Hitler. And I know whenever you'd ever want to go to the Hitler example, but one of my favorite quotes from him was, he said, when people resist the things that he was teaching, he would say, it really doesn't matter to me whether you agree with me or not. I have your children in my schools, and in 30 years, that will be the only community that they will have ever known, and you'll be gone.
Right.
If you can get a hold of the textbooks, if you can present these concepts of identity and purpose and value, you're willing to be patient and play the long game, you win the culture.
100%. No doubt. They knew that in the public schools is where they indoctrinate all of the people of this country.
Yeah.
They know that getting in there and telling kids about the gender stuff or the race theory or pandemic stuff with masks, I mean, all of that is how they control the masses. I mean, it's all according to plan, it feels like.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%, and it is. So if we study history, we see that there were those from John Dewey and others who were these progressives who decided that they would play the long game And they would have this slow march through the institutions to take over the culture. And they would do that through by overturning the family, by infiltrating the church, getting into education and higher education. And we see that everywhere. And now that you can add big tech to that and big pharma to that and big government to that, mm-hmm. wow, that's a powerhouse monster that's tough to defeat. Which makes this very exciting times for you and mm-hmm. I to live in.
Yeah. But you're defeating it. You're defeating it because you took it. Again, it's hard. It's hard to do. But you took the power into your own hands. And you said, I'm going to raise my children the right way. I'm not going to let some state institution teach my children nonsense. I am going to make sure that they have the right values and know how to critically think and think yep. for themselves.
And your son is here today, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, no, James.
James, if you want to say hi.
He's gone.
Yeah, you survived homeschooling. You got out on the other end, it seems like. Yeah.
Did your teacher bully you?
A little bit. From third grade up until like ninth grade.
I wasn't the teacher. I was the disciplinarian. Yeah. So when he was bad, he got sent to my office.
Right. Well, it seems like he turned out. So, guys.
Yeah,
let's not knock on homeschooling.
That's like, he's a pretty great guy.
He made it all the way to a PragerU internship. So
that is very true. Exactly. Our former intern.
With Will and Amal Alive last year, just a few months ago.
Yeah, just a few months ago, which was a great help. Really,
we miss you dearly.
If people want to save America, focus on your own family first. You know, if we focus on our own families, to then that's chain reactions to be able to be grassroots and get out and influence a lot more people, then we can do a lot of good. But when parents give up the fight for their kids' values to the government or to the schools or whatever it is, or to the mainstream media yeah. or some professor, then we lose the fight because yeah. you have to keep doing that over and over and over again.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. What I've learned from studying history and some great wise friends of mine, our founders understood that the secret that made America so unique, it really started with the Great Awakening. When the heart is changed, people, they have a different set of values and they're able to be responsible with freedom. And they understood that a nation needed to be built from the bottom up and from the inside out, rather than a king or a queen that would just sort of assemble an army, round up a bunch of people, make rules and enforce them. You see this in authoritarian nations. They were like, no, let's say that God rules in our hearts. We want to do the right thing. We want to treat our neighbors as ourselves. And then we take care of our family first. And then as families, we begin to take care of one another. And we're going to take care of the poor and the needy. And we are the family of faith. And we are the welfare system within our local communities. And then we have local government. And then we ultimately will elect people from within our communities with character to take in these leadership roles in civil government, but they're going to be accountable to us mm-hmm. and they're going to have our consent. And if they actually break their covenant with their neighbors, with those that they've been entrusted to take care of, we're going to replace them because that wouldn't be keeping our community safe if we let them continue to rule. But that's a very unique concept in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And we've been pushing all of that aside, wanting to be like other nations. And we've been lied to and we've gotten lazy and we need to get back to it and do it quick or we're going to lose it.
I know it's like during the French Revolution. I mean, they asked us for help, right? They asked us for help on how to do a constitution. And now we're looking at Western Europe as like the ideal model. And it's mm-hmm. like, why we want to work, you know, people in Western Europe, they don't even work. And now we want to be like them. It's ridiculous. And Thomas Jefferson, I mean, he said that you should only have public schools in America if they have the Bible in them, if they're teaching the Bible. And now you have strayed so far away from that, that it's unrecognizable from the situation that you were just talking about yep. how it was supposed to be set up. It's not even close to what it was.
So that all happened on our watch. You guys are younger than I am, but it's happened on my watch. It's happened on my parents' watch. And for the last 50 to 100 years, we've allowed this to slip through our fingers. And so I think it's important for us to shift our thinking instead of saying those guys, these terrible people over there on the other side of the political aisle or the ideological fence, they're the problem. I would say no. If termites have infected my house and I got rats and roaches living in my kids' rooms, you're going to look at me and go, Kirk, what are you doing? Right? Wake up. Step up. This is happening on your watch. If my marriage falls apart, I have to take some responsibility and say, you know, this wilted and got to where it is while I was supposed to be on, you know, on watch. And I think in America, we have to say, wait a minute, we didn't used to be the subculture, the ones who are being, we didn't used to be viewed as the villains. The people of Judeo-Christian values and faith, people who celebrated liberty and limited government, we were the ones who were leading the culture and designing the nation, and we were prospering. And somehow on our watch, we've gotten lazy and let that fall away. Mm-hmm. And so the good news about that is that we are also the ones who have the solution. It's not so much about getting rid of those who oppose us as much as we just need to wake up and start doing what we did before. Right. I think.
I think that's exactly right. I completely agree. Yeah.
To my European friends, I do think you work.
Right, I was going to say, you're going to walk back on that?
We've had a few angry commenters. Right?
Unless you live in Spain, you know, you guys have siestas and things. But for the rest of you guys in Europe, you're great.
Goodness. Now, Kirk, you brought up something that I want to touch on. That's like my favorite thing to talk about. You brought up marriage, okay? And you've been in a very long, successful marriage with Chelsea. And you talk about that in your Stories of Us. Again, you guys can watch that at PragerU.com, our latest episode. Marriage doesn't seem to be the norm anymore. And you, as a Hollywood star, decided, you know what, marriage is for me, and that's so much better than the sort of hookup culture that people are talking about now and pushing for these days. What precipitated that decision for you?
To get married?
Mm-hmm.
So I met my wife on the set of Growing Pains. Actually, that's not true. I met my wife on the set of my sister Candace Cameron's show, Full House. Mm. And she was there visiting someone, and I saw her, and I thought, wow, how beautiful that girl is. And my mom said to me later, she said, you know, that girl's come down a few times and I've gotten to know her. In fact, she is more beautiful on the inside than she is on the outside. And I'm hoping one day you marry someone just like her. So it turns out a year later, she's on my show, Growing Pains. We become a boyfriend and girlfriend on the show. And within a year, I propose to her, we get married.
Lucky guy.
How perfect is that?
Yeah,
no, that's incredible.
And like I had mentioned in Stories of Us, I have people who are like, oh, tell me all the juicy stories about when you were 17, 18. I'm like, you know, it's very interesting. I know you're going to think that this sounds crazy, but like, I skipped past so much of that stuff and I got the better end of the deal.
Mm. For sure.
I've got this wonderful, lifelong friend, Chelsea, and for 30 years, we've lived this awesome life and we've got 6 kids and four of them are adopted. And my wife herself, she's an adopted child, and we're making movies about adoption and pro-life and homeschooling and all the things that I'm passionate about, things that I love. And I think, man, I could have missed it so easily. I could have missed it. I could have just said, no, I want to play the Hollywood game a little bit longer. And I would have missed the best things in my life. I'm just super grateful. And my advice to people is, if you do the right thing over the long haul, you win. Do the right thing over the long haul and you win. Don't sell out the greatest reward by doing the wrong thing in the short term for a quick thrill. Because you could miss out on something awesome.
That is fantastic advice. I was going to say, like, how did you feel about young... How do you feel about the narrative right now that young women and men are seeing that they shouldn't focus on marriage? They should just go through the dating and the hookups and all that. And that's so much more fulfilling, if not empowering, than being married. That seems to be a pretty commonplace narrative these days.
Yeah, I understand. And what I would say is... those who think that, they have such a low view of marriage and such a low view of relationships. And what they don't understand is that there is sacred treasure there. There's life there that you know nothing of because you've been lied to and told that there's something quicker, faster, better, more thrilling. And I said, no, you can't touch what I have. Unless you go through life together and you you struggle together and you go through the hard and difficult things together. That's where love is. That's where the treasure is. And marriage for us has been great. I know that that's not been everybody's experience. And I give Chelsea most of the credit because I think the most challenging thing about my marriage is me. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes sense.
Are you guys married? Are you married?
Taylor is recently married out of the three of us.
Yeah.
There we go. Right.
Not yet.
Will and I are not.
Not yet. Are we getting close? No? Any prospects?
Prospects, yes.
Prospects, okay.
Prospects, yes. Okay. I don't know if Will would answer the same.
That's right.
But
that's
right.
Will, are you all right?
Yeah. Your boyfriend or your girlfriend could be listening right now, so I don't want to put you in hot, you know, in the
don't
hot
worry.
Seat.
Don't worry.
I'm not the toughest interviewer you've ever had, I'm
no,
sure.
No, please, I'm sweating.
Certainly not.
On your own show, no less.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's coming on to grill us on our own show. Make sure we get married soon.
Hey, don't wait. Oh, my goodness.
No, I agree. There's no reason to wait.
That's right.
There's no reason. If you're in love with a person and you think that it's right, and why not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I it certainly worked out well for me. I got married when I was 20.
Right.
Mm. And my kids have gotten married pretty young. But I understand, you know, it's like there's just a whole different mentality right now, and it's like I got to get this under my belt. I got to do this. Mm-hmm. I got to have fun before I really settle down. Like, oh man, I can't think of anything more exciting than growing up together, traveling the world together, going on adventures together, and learning together when you're young and you've got all this energy. Like, how cool and exciting is that?
Right. Yeah.
That's what we did, and super glad.
I wanted to show the picture that you sent me of your just beautiful family here.
Thanks. I'm going to look at it again.
Yeah, yeah. If you have anything you want to say, just go for it. It's such a beautiful photo. You've created such just like a big, wonderful family.
We sort of look like a Benetton ad there, right?
Yeah,
I'm like,
right.
We've got like every color of the rainbow there.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
It's beautiful. So we have six kids. Three of them are married, and my daughter, Anna, just got married in November. Okay. And I had the privilege of playing a challenging dual role of both the father of the bride and the minister at her wedding.
That's got to be nerve-wracking.
It was nerve-wracking. It was really nerve-wracking. And I'm not a minister, so like I'm not ordained to do this. Mm-hmm. But I pulled it off. It went great. I didn't mess up his name.
Right.
That's important.
That is
very
important. Part.
Yeah. Very important. Yeah. Because that's
videotaped. You don't want to marry her to the wrong guy.
No.
Right.
No.
Right.
No. Not at all. And my other daughter Bella is also married to a great guy, Justin. But because they got married in the middle of the pandemic, I had to watch their wedding on my laptop through Zoom. So that was pretty,
right.
Mm-hmm. Pretty different.
Pretty different.
So we're hoping we get a redo on that. Maybe we get a mulligan, you know, this summer, and we can have a real wedding.
Yeah, redo the ceremony.
That's
definitely.
Right. She didn't get to wear a dress yet.
Oh,
and it was expensive.
Right.
So we want to.
Oh yeah.
I want to walk her down the aisle.
Yeah,
definitely redo
make
that.
Make use of it for sure.
And then after that, you got three more to go.
And I've got three more to go.
Just three more.
You know, James.
James,
James is available over there. He's single.
Let's put the camera on him again.
That's it. Look at this
ladies.
Guy.
Ladies.
We'll drop his hat in the comments. His handle.
That's right.
That is amazing. So great. We have one last segment to do with you, Kirk Cameron. Today we're gonna react to some crazy TikToks that we found on the internet. Are you familiar with TikTok? Are you in this realm of social media?
I told you I've got six kids. I get TikTok videos sent to me every single day.
Okay, great.
I love TikTok videos.
Fantastic. You're probably not gonna love these. But
I'm probably not gonna love these.
But I'm glad that you love TikTok. Here's TikTok number one. This is from a teacher, a non-binary teacher. So here
we
go.
My name is Magistra Y. I'm non-binary and I am a high school teacher. So today I thought I'd tell you a little bit about what I've done and what my school has done to make me feel comfortable out as non-binary at my school. The first thing is really easy. I wear a pronoun pin every day. This works as a visual cue for my students. When I introduced myself to my students, I also gave them some example sentences for those students who weren't as familiar with using they/them pronouns. So I told them, you could say, oh, I have Magistra Y's class next. They teach Latin. I wanted to have a few
Isn't
visual cues
plural?
In my classroom.
Yes,
to show
they
students
is plural.
That it is a welcoming and inclusive place. So one of the things I did was I put a pride flag on my desk. I'll take a pause here and say I am very, very lucky to teach at the school I teach at. They are very openly devoted to diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. Those are some of the things that I've done, but what about my school? I use the title Magistra instead of Mr. or Miss, and the IT team actually managed to code it into the system, so anytime my name pops up, it comes up with Magistra Y instead of Mr. or Miss.
Magistra?
What does that mean? Really,
I've never heard of that. I'm just going to pause. There's so much here, so much to unpack.
That makes me want them to bring back the 60-second limit on TikTok.
I know, seriously.
Cut her off. Jeez. Cut her off, bartender. You're right, they is plural, so I hope she's not teaching English or grammar. But this is what schools look like in a lot of states in this nation right now.
See how every single thing she said was about her?
Yes.
Not one thing she said was about the students
I think
them being taught?
The one thing I got out of that is that she teaches Latin, and I wish I'd learned some Latin watching this instead of learning her pronouns and her orientation.
Uh-huh.
And it's very unfortunate.
It was unfortunate. There's nothing about teaching kids in that entire video.
Yep.
All it is just her own personal whatever that she wants to put out as her vanity to the world.
Yeah. And this is the new normal. Mm-hmm. I bet she's giving out gender-bred men. Oh, sorry, persons.
Yeah.
Gender-bred
please.
Persons.
I'm all.
To her students. So it seems like you were ahead of the curve on this. If your kids were in school right now, this might be one of the situations that they were in.
Yeah, shocking, stunning,
brave,
and because how do I even react to that?
I guess the question that comes
to my mind is how did we let this happen? Mm-hmm. How did we let this happen? And it makes me want to go join the school board. Makes me want to say I need to get involved. We can't. I mean, what's next? Where does this kind of thing lead?
Yep.
I don't think it's worse.
Yeah, as it gets more and more accepted. And now what the parents that come and speak out about this stuff in their schools are labeled domestic terrorists by the DOJ. So it's just an ever tangled web that we keep getting into. And yeah, it's hard. Parents, you have to show up to your school boards and run for school board seats.
Yeah.
And be the person in your community that's making change and calling it out.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. Just. Do something. We've got to get off the defense and get onto the offense.
Right.
Yeah.
We can't just sit back and complain and say, oh my goodness, did you see what they're doing now? Oh, like, where's the world going? And you know, let me call out some Christians here for some bad thinking. There are some people, the Christian community is the community that I'm most familiar with, and it may not just be that community, but there's a community of people that say, you know, look how bad things are getting. You know, it's terrible. In fact, and we know that things are just going to get worse and worse. And so we're just sort of watching it all unfold as it's meant to. And that becomes an excuse not to do anything about it. And so you create this self-fulfilling prophecy, not knowing that, no, the idea is to actually go create the culture, not just cower and run from the culture and wait for the whole thing to fall apart. Because you think you're going to get taken up to heaven and not have to deal with all this stuff, but it's to actually create the culture that you want to see for your kids and your grandkids, which means we need to get off the defense and get on the offense.
Yeah, Taylor, this is something that you can sort of speak to. You said you had a run-in with sort of progressivism in the church that you weren't super happy about, and you actually did something.
Yeah, one of my church locally here was starting to use some of this woke language, and I think we had a prayer for our Latinx brothers and sisters, and they started this diversity team, and it was some of the resources that they listed on the website were these very obviously influenced by this postmodern neo-Marxist wave of you know, from the Frankfurt School, woke critical theory and all that stuff. And it's not just something, you know, we talk about critical theory in school curricula, but this is happening in the church as well. And I've seen a lot of pastors whom I respected have been very silent on this, and some have even become friendly to it. And I don't know, a lot of it seems it's unwittingly so. They think it's just like the kind or nice thing to do is to kind of give the benefit of the doubt. But like you're saying, it's if we just, you know, retreat to our Chick-fil-A, Tim Tebow, you know, and yeah, that, you know, bang that drum and this is, we'll be safe in our little bubble. The bubble keeps shrinking. And before you know it, you've completely lost the culture. And I think this woke thing in the church is one of the things that I'm most concerned with as a believer right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know the times are tough for a lot of people, financially speaking, definitely, and it's hard. But a lot of the stuff that you can do is free. Like, you can go and talk to the elders of your church, the deacons of your church, and talk to them. You can go to the school board. Just giving a couple of hours a week to go and do these kind of things, it's free. It doesn't cost anything. You can go and do it. You can be that change. There's no excuses anymore.
Yeah, that's right. And again, the stuff that you guys are doing with your podcast, the stuff that Charlie Kirk is doing, and Will, you're going to be with Charlie tonight at a church out near us. And you guys give great ideas on things that we can do that don't cost money. They cost us our time, and we need to do it.
Yeah,
absolutely. One more TikTok here before we close out. And this is a video from 1943. See if it rings true to what we're dealing with today.
In 1943, the following directive was issued from party headquarters to all communists in the United States. It read, when certain obstructionists become too irritating, label them after suitable buildups as fascist or Nazi or anti-Semitic, and use the prestige of anti-fascist and tolerance organizations to discredit them. In the public mind, constantly associate those who oppose us with those names which already have a bad smell. The association will, after enough repetition, become fact in the public mind. In 1943,
yeah, that's right.
Does that sound familiar at all?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a trap that we actually fall into on both sides. A lot of conservatives go and label leftists as the super extreme things when not all of them are. And I think we see it more so on the left than ever before. And it is a trick of language. Look how long Will and I and Taylor and Kirk have been called conspiracy theorists in regard to the COVID-19 pandemic and the things that we believe in our daily lives. And it turns out not to be true. But once you've set out these labels on somebody, once you've labeled that extreme word of fascist or Nazi or white supremacist, as I've been called, which is hilarious, the word loses meaning. Yeah, white supremacist, can you believe that?
I can believe it.
Yeah, I can believe
I can
it.
Definitely believe
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
she's half white.
I'm half white, so half of myself hates the other half.
Exactly.
And it's
no,
just
it's
an
totally
ongoing
fair.
Battle every day. Yeah, but these words lose meaning as you continue to call people them and throw them out at people who you simply are labeling them as that because you disagree with them. And I'm sure you've had your fair run-in of being called those names.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. And we talked a little bit about that earlier.
When he saw me at Chipotle, I mean, that's what I was saying as soon as I saw him.
Yeah. I forgot about the laugh track.
We should have been using it this whole time.
The only person who laughs at my jokes is the laugh track.
Yes,
Taylor
very
does.
True.
All right, sorry, guys.
So isn't it amazing how important language is?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it amazing that if you can simply control words, you can control the way that people think? And I think that's why entertainment is so important. Movies, music, television. These aren't just places that we go to relax and escape with make-believe stories. They're actually culture-shaping tools that are very effective at altering hearts and minds. And I think that they've been used very effectively by the woke crowd to create the new normal. And then the rest of us are sort of reacting to it. And what we need to be doing is instead of saying, oh, shut off your TV. Just don't go see those movies. What we need to be doing is saying, no, we need to start making the media that is going to create the kind of world that we want for our kids. We need more filmmakers. We need more television producers. We need more people to enter the music industry because that's what shapes our culture. Mm-hmm. That's how we tell our stories. That's
exactly.
How we know who the good guys and the bad guys are, what good ideas and bad ideas are all about. And so those of us who have a solid moral and spiritual foundation, and when I say solid, I'm talking about the one that built this country. And if we want to see that kind of culture again, we need to stop retreating from the areas that scare us. We need to run to them and take them over and take them back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like entertainment, all that stuff. I mean, those people on the left are following Alinsky's rule for radicals and then getting totally. Into all these places and taking them over. They knew what they were doing. And by the time the conservatives realized that this is what's happening, it's too late. Yep. And now it's we're playing catch up. But we have to play that catch up. We have to be ready for that fight. And you're doing that fight, man.
And I think this is an exciting time to live. This is the kind of culture that heroes are created. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't get a George Washington. You don't get those kinds of brave hearts without really difficult circumstances. And not that I want to be in Braveheart's shoes, but those stories that inspire us always take place during times of great challenge and difficulty. And so whoever's out there listening, heroes are needed. 100%. Men and women of character and faith and courage are wanted. Please apply.
I wake up every day with seeing when things are getting like worse in some ways. I wake up every day just full of fire. That's awesome, you know, that I used to not feel like that. But now seeing more and more, I feel passionate when I wake up and say, well, now I see this happening. That means that I can talk about it. That means I can go fight against it. That means that I can be someone to try and be this hero in this world. You know, it makes me feel better in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's never been a better time to make a difference. There's never been an easier time to make a difference when you see all of your friends and the entire culture heading off the cliff. All you have to do is say no. All you have to do is stand there and don't go with them. Mm-hmm. And you're already making a difference. And there's not that many people who are willing to do it. Most people, unfortunately, they prefer to run with the crowd. Mm-hmm. They don't want to stand out. And again, you guys are setting a great example of that. And anybody can do it. You just have to know who you are and why you're here. If you get that nailed down, then just be willing to do the right thing, and you'll make a difference. Oh, and you'll inspire others to do the same thing.
Well, Amla was just some kid. I was just some kid, but even more stupid. And now we're able to do all this. It's really cool, you know, to be that. Just like anyone can do it. And not everyone can do it at the same level, of course, but everyone, there's always something you can do. It's that old quote, not everyone can help everyone, but everyone can help someone.
That's right.
Right? It's like everyone has a part to play. Everyone has something that they can do, and you know you do watching. You know you do.
That's right. And you guys have a gift of being able to speak and talk and use your words to communicate ideas to help the rest of us understand. And not all of us can do what you do, but each one of us has a group of friends, some people in our family that you guys are never going to impact because they don't listen to your show. But I can impact them because I get my hair cut over at that guy's salon, or I go to work with these people over here. I go to school with these people over here, and no one's going to impact them as effectively as I could if I just do my part.
Right.
Do your part,
people have
guys.
Amazing gifts.
Yes, they do. You know? Beautiful way to close out the show, Mr. Kirk Cameron.
Hey, thank you guys for having me on the show. This is awesome. And I consider this my son's show, too, because he was here with you for over a month.
Shout out to James.
No. Shout out to James, ladies.
Ladies.
Still available an hour later.
Hit him up. Don't leave him hanging there.
The matches are flying in.
Kirk Cameron, how can people support you?
How can you support me? Mm-hmm. You know what I would love? On Facebook and Instagram, I'm doing this thing called the American Campfire Revival. And essentially, during President Biden's first 100 days in office, I had sort of a counter plan of 100 days for the family of faith. And I began to teach the principles that made America the exceptional, amazing place that it is. And I began to pray together with people on Facebook and Instagram. And we have done this now for a year, and we've grown as a community, and I'd love for you to join me there. Check out what we're doing. Just go to my Instagram page or Facebook page, and every night, five nights a week, I'm live from my backyard. I make a campfire, and I've gotten really good at making campfires, and we have a great time together talking about how to bring revival to our hearts, our homes, and our nation.
Fantastic. And I want to come to one of those.
Yeah, come on, let's go.
I'll come over. Are there s'mores? Why you said you kind of hesitated?
Well, sometimes s'mores, sometimes cigars. It kind of depends on the night.
We'll like both.
I love both. All right.
So that's on the books.
Listen, did I just invite myself to Kirk Cameron's house?
Yes, you did.
Yes, I definitely did.
Well, ever since we bumped into each other at Chipotle, we're buds now.
Best friends.
No, I know. No, but seriously, Kirk, you're on fire, man. You're doing incredible work. We really, really appreciate you. I mean, to be in your position and to do what you do, really, like, that is an incredibly brave thing. Not many people will choose that life and to do it. And you have said, I am going to do it. I'm going to be brave and stand up this way. You're an incredible guy, really.
Well, you're very kind. And I also want to thank you for giving me your book, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies. I'm really excited to read this. Too bad you don't have any good commendations on the back. Let's see. Dennis Prager, Candace Owens, and James O'Keefe.
Just a bunch of nobodies.
Yeah. Just a bunch of...
Could use more.
That's right. And I can't wait to read this. Thanks. I hope everybody reads it.
Thank you, man. I didn't pay
him
to say that.
He didn't even have to do it himself.
I know. I didn't even have to plug my own book.
And look at this. You got a donkey and an elephant. Uh-huh. Are they roasting marshmallows over a campfire?
You know, see, that it was all
that?
Part of the plan to
that's
get
it.
Over
it
to
looks
your
like they're
place
having
to
s'mores.
Have s'mores. That's
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's a long set plan.
It's been in the works for years.
We'll keep you updated on when Will gets to have this campfire with
this
Kirk Cameron.
This is like some Goldfinger Operation Grand Slam type of thing.
We should do a show live from the campfire sometime.
I would love that. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Fantastic. Well, we'll keep you guys posted on when that happens. Thank you guys so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. That is 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. Also, share this episode with a friend, a family member, a peer, someone that you love. Get them educated and get them talking about the issues of today's time. If you'd like to listen to this episode, go to Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts. Follow us there. Give us a 5-star review to let other people know you love the show. Let us know you love the show. And comment down below, what was the most important thing that was said during the episode today, because there was a lot of large pieces of wisdom that you guys can carry with you throughout your lives. We're going to be back tomorrow, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. We'll see you then.
Thanks, guys. God bless you.